Okay, so I come back now to the method to develop software when you are in a team, and especially we talk about agile method. So when you want to do software development in a team, there is several methods to do that. So the first one is no method. It's what was used really in the past when they start computer programming. They just do some code and fix the problem. Code fix the problem, and there is not really some real organization. So this actually is pretty efficient for a really small project. When you do something with just one or two files, you can develop a code and fix it and fix the bug pretty quickly, and it's almost really efficient for a really small project. But you can easily understand when you have some really big project, it starts to be hard, and it's difficult to add new features, to find bugs if it's a really big project, because you just add, so you have to plan a bit the thing in advance. So then there is some other methods that are inspired from engineering. So they call it engineering and or plan-driven methodology. So this comes from civil and mechanical engineering. So it's the thing you have to, for example, build a bridge. So you first you draw the bridge, then you make some construction plan, so then you distribute the task between all the people who will really build the bridge, and then finally you go to the construction of this bridge. And finally, we will mainly talk today about agile method. So the idea is this method is pretty predictive. So you have to predict everything first and then do it. And the agile method, the goal is to be more adaptative rather than predictive. And it's also to be people-oriented rather than process-oriented. So I start first a bit by what is engineering methodology. So the really classical one is waterfall methodology. So you start with requirement analysis. So you discuss with the customer what you want. Probably you ask the customer to sign a contract to say exactly what you want and this thing. Then you go to the design. You try to think how you will do it. Then you code it. Then you do the integration of several parts if the developer have worked on several parts of the project. And this, what I was saying before, this part can be really tough if you didn't do the integration as soon as it happened. And finally, you test your project and you deploy it. And you see this, sometimes they represent this also waterfall like a V. I don't know if you saw already this V. For software development, so there is some link, for example, test is a way to test the requirement and all these things. And so yeah, so the problem as this one is that it's really, you have to plan everything from the beginning and then you go down. So there is a really big separation between the design and the construction. So it's come really from, because it's come from civil and mechanical engineering. Before building a bridge, you have first to design it. But the thing is, design is sometimes unpredictable and require creative people. And construction is predictable and require people with lower skills. So like, for example, building a bridge, just workers can do it. If the plan is good at the beginning, you just give some tasks to the worker and they can build the bridge. And in all this civil engineering, usually the construction is really bigger in both cost in time than design. So that's why they really separate. So they have first some time for the design, and then they go to the building. But the design is pretty short compared to the construction. So that's why they have this clear separation. But the question now is, what is design and construction for software development? So if some of you have some idea, what is design and what is construction?
Probably the design, we have to do with the data structures that you will use.
Yes.
And the object-oriented model.
Yes, something like that. So it's what I put here. So UML can be the design and is coding the construction, but it's always a bit hard to know. I think it's not really defined. There is not really a defined answer to this question. I think it depends a lot of the people of the project. So some may find that UML is a design and coding is a construction, but if I don't know if you use a lot UML, but usually when you do that, when you try to implement an UML model, you figure out that there is a lot of problem in your UML model and you have to fix it and to modify it a bit. And so I think it's not really possible to plan everything with the UML model. So then some other people have proposed that creating the code is maybe just the design and compiling is the construction. So because still coding something is still a creative part. So if we consider that, then a construction is really quick and cheap because we just have to compile and it can take some time in some project, maybe 1 hour, but still it's really quick and cheap. So coding require, in this case, coding requires some creative and talented people. I think it's hard, we can see that it's hard to give just an UML model to someone who are not really good in programming and say, do this model. So we still have to have some creative and talented people to do the coding part. And like we say that creative processes are unpredictable, so creating the source code is still a bit unpredictable. And so the question is, are the engineering methodology well adapted to this software development if we consider that we have this separation between design and construction? And also one of the main questions, say, is software development predictable? Because if it's predictable, then maybe we can use this software, this engineering methodology. But if it's not predictable, it's maybe not really well adapted. So the answer is yes, in some case. For example, if you are programming something for the spaceship at the NASA, you want to be sure that it do exactly what you want and it will not go a bit in the right, if the spaceship will go a bit in the right or something like that. You want that it really respect the requirement. So yes, in some cases, but usually requirements are also unpredictable, especially when the software involves interaction with the user, because it's a bit hard from the beginning to really know what is good and what will work. So it, especially you have done some teaching with Wendy with design, redesign, and you see that it's you cannot do really well at the beginning. So sometimes the customer don't really know precisely what they want. They want a software for doing that, but they don't know all the small functionalities they need in the software. It's also hard to evaluate the cost of several options. For example, the customer wants several functionalities and maybe may hesitate between two functionalities, but he don't really know which one is easy and which one is hard to implement. So it because and even for the programmer, it's hard to know. So you cannot say to the customer, if you want this functionality, it would cost this amount, and if you want this functionality, it would cost this amount. So it's a bit hard for the customer to know what you really want, because you don't really know how much it would cost to get these functionalities. And it's also hard to estimate which feature are useful without testing the software. So it implies that the requirement should be flexible in this case, and we don't have to have a fixed requirement at the beginning, and you cannot change it from all the development part. So I like this graphics, because you have at the bottom you have the requirements, so it's well known or maybe sometime unknown. It depends mainly on the customer, and on the developer part you have also the technology part. If you know really well at the beginning what you will use, So you know that, for example, if you are programming something for the NASA, it has to be in this language, and all this stuff are really well defined at the beginning. But if you are doing a project, you don't know really well at the beginning which technology you might use. And so we have also this aspect here. And so you have this part of the, it's really predictable. So you know what the customer wants, and you also know what you will use to do that. So then you can use some methodologies that, like the engineering methodology with like the waterfall, and you fix the requirement at the beginning and then you do it. But then if you are in this part, it's a bit more well adapted to this part. And if, of course, if you are in this part, you don't have a magical solution. You can maybe just code and see what's happened. So to deal with this unpredictable requirement, the Agile method proposes two stuff. So first, to have some iterative development. So you will try something and iterate again and again. And so you will involve the customer at each iteration to show him the new version of the software and to ask him if he wants some new feature or not, and to say him, oh, this feature, we can add it really easily, because then you have developed one part of the software, then you are most able to know if it's hard to add this functionality and if it's hard to add another. So you can say, oh, this one, it's really easy to add. We can add easily this one if you want. It will not cost you too much. But if you see that another one is really hard to to add, you can say to the customer, oh no, this one is really hard to and we cannot do it easily. And also at each iteration, you can try to improve your team organization, what they call a self-adaptative process. So each time you can try to improve the organization of the team and to avoid, if you have encountered some issue during this iteration, you can try to avoid it for the next iteration. The second thing is you need an effective team of developers, because in the engineering methodology, sometimes they see the developer like a plug and play. So this one is a tester, that's what I say maybe later. This one is a coder, this one is a, and everybody has really to do something, and they say plug and play, because if it's not good, you can put another tester. And in the Agile method, they want to have an effective team of developers, so they consider what they say, people first. So they want to consider the people not our replaceable part, so analyst, coder, developer, but I think developers are, they say that are responsible professional. So they make the decision, and they also do all this thing together. They code something, but they test it because they have to do it by their own, and they make their own decision. And it's also the developer who are able to best evaluate the time required to perform the task. Because you know, in some company, you have the manager that say it has to be done in 2 months, but you don't really know how long it takes to do that. So in Agile methods, they consider that the people who best know how long it takes to do some task, it's the developers themselves. So they have to fix themselves the deadline and all this thing. So yeah, I switched to the manifesto for Agile methods. So several people I've wrote really this manifesto. You can find it on this website. And the four main points of the Agile method. So it's to focus more on individual on interaction over process and tools. So really focus on the people, on the interaction with the customer. The thing is also to have a working software over a comprehensive documentation. So it's better to have something which works, even if it's not well documented, but if it's work, you can show it to the customer and discuss with him. If you just have the documentation, of course, you can also show it to the customer, but it's not really useful. So they really prefer to have something working and don't spend too much time doing some huge documentation and doing a lot of report, because in the waterfall for example, organization, you do the requirement, so you make a big report with the requirement. Then you do the design, you do another big report about design and everything like this. So at the end, you have a lot of documentation, but sometimes the software is just not working at the end. So. And the third point is to have customer collaboration and not a negotiated contract. So it's a bit like what I was saying. You don't make a big requirement document and make it signed by the client at the end, and then try on it. You try to collaborate with the customer and try to see what is good or not. And also to have to be responding to change over following the plan. So it's a bit. What's the main concept of agile method, to be able to be adaptive to the change. So if we take the color from waterfall model, this one, so we keep the same color and agile method can be represented like this. So we have the vision at the beginning of what we want to do, and then we do several iterations and to try to reach this goal. So each iteration is also part, there is also some detailed requirement, some design and analysis, some implementation, of course, and some testing and acceptance by the customer. And then, yeah, and you can also deploy the first version of the software, maybe not at the first iteration, but as soon as you have something we can work well, you can deploy it. And you can also, you have to have some evaluation and prioritization of the task you want to do to continue for the next iteration. So I will just talk a bit about, so agile method is a kind of family classification for methods. So there are several examples for programming software development methods. So, we use agile concept. So the first one, it's really famous, maybe you heard a bit about it, it's extreme programming. So the idea, it's a test-driven deployment. So you can do both at the same time. You can write the code and write the test at the same time, but you can also just write the test first and then write the code to pass this test. So it's really a test driven development. So you really write first the test and then you write the code. And extreme programming is also based on pair programming. I will talk a bit later about pair programming. There is also Scrum. I will talk also about Scrum a bit later. And there is also Crystal, is also a famous one. So Crystal focuses really on the safety of the code to be sure that you have something working efficiently. And they also talk about habitability for the developer. So the idea, extreme programming require a lot of discipline from the programmer. They have to follow some fixed rules. And the goal of Crystal is to be a bit more flexible for the developer. So they say it requires less discipline than extreme programming. In the agile method, you have also all the open source process, because usually you have some distributed contributor, and you want them to collaborate, and you cannot do everything at the beginning, because, you know, for example, all the Linux distributions, they evolve each time. So each time they plan some new feature for the next iteration, and the people do, you have probably seen that on some software, you see the list of the to-do list for the next release, and they do it, and if they cannot do everything, they put it back for the next release, and that's it. So you have probably seen this kind of stuff in the open software community. And there is also a parallelized debugging, because even some people who are not involved in the project can look for some bug and can submit it to the people. So everybody can be a contributor and fix the bug. Another interesting one is lean development. So it's Lean is one industrial process, mainly from Toyota. So the idea of Lean is to do just in time. So it's not good to do some feature for long. It's one technique of programming. Not good to do something for long term. So they consider that you can just do just in time. So just do the task and the feature you have to do first, and to do it. And in the, it's also based on Jidoka. The idea is you can do some automatization of some process, but it's good that the human can keep the control on this process. So in Toyota, it was when they are building cars, usually some machine is in charge to building the car, but if something goes wrong, the human can still stop everything and look what goes wrong, because in some other industrial process, sometimes it continue to go, and you just at the end of the construction, you can manage the problem. But they say that it's not good, because when you are at the end of the line, the problem is can be really big. So that's why Lean concept is to, when something goes wrong, you stop all the machine, and the human can keep the control on the machine and try to understand what's happened, what is the problem, and try to fix it before starting again the machine. And the last one is a bit, there is not really a big consensus if it is or it is not an agile method. So it's RUP, so rational unified process. So this one is interesting because it's use case driven. So in this case, you really define the use case first, and then you try to implement this use case. So it's also iterative and also based on it's architecture centric. So it means you try to build the good architecture for your use case first. So you really try to build this architecture in first. So yeah, I will talk a bit about not really extreme programming, but pair programming, because I think it's interesting in the context of collaboration. And I will then talk about Scrum, because I think Scrum is a good example of agile method. So pair programming, so it means that you have two programmers working only on one computer. So I like this picture, because they say that if you want to have good pair programming, you want to have not one user in front of the screen, but both users, and they can easily share the keyboard in the mouse if they want to work together. So usually there is some particular role for each user. So one is the one who drives, so it means that he has the mouse and the keyboard and is really coding. So this one is more focused on the syntax, the semantic, and the algorithmic, try to really code the thing. And the other one, they say that it navigates, so it watch what the other is doing, he learns sometime. He can also ask some question and talk with the one who is really doing the code. He can also make some suggestion about what they should do. And so this one is more focused on a higher level of abstraction. So he can think about the test, is what they are doing will pass the test or not. He can also think about the technical tasks they are doing. He can also think some simple things, the time since the last commit. They say, oh, it's a long time, we didn't commit, we should commit. And he can also more focus on the quality of the overall design. So he can think, yeah, but we are doing this now, but it's really coding. We should think a bit what should be the global design of what we are doing. So the advantages of peer programming is, of course, the code quality, because there is some kind of evaluation have shown that there is a better design in the code. There is also fewer bugs, because the other one can look what you are the one who code is doing and say, oh, it's a bit weird that doing that, we should not do that. So there is fewer bugs. And what is really important, I think, in a company is there is a good spreading of knowledge, because if you have a team of developers, the good thing is the pair have to switch off regularly. So it's not always the same two people who are working the weather, but we try to, I don't know, each 2 days or each 2 weeks, you try to mix the pair, and then it's a good way to spreading all the knowledge between all the team. And then you can spread technical concept, of course, but also conceptual knowledge. So for example, if some people, if also good if you hire some new people, then they can learn with some people who are already there, some new languages. They can learn how is the architecture of the project and all this thing really quickly. And there is also, of course, the social aspect, because there is no loneliness, because you are still working with someone. Sometimes it can be annoying, but usually it's better to work with someone, not be alone. And so it's more convivial and you can have a better motivation for your team if they are working together. And the big drawbacks, well, it's not really the drawbacks, but a lot of people say then because you are two working on one computer, you lost a lot of productivity. Because then they can say you divide by two the productivity. But in fact, I think it's not true. I think it's really hard to evaluate, so we should be a bit careful. But productivity, yeah, so it depends how you measure productivity. Sometimes you measure productivity in terms of line of codes produced per day, for example. So in 1 day, you measure exactly the number of lines the developer have done. So of course, if you measure that, maybe peer programming is less productive, less efficient, because just one people is coding, it can produce less line of code. But if you measure also running and tested feature instead of line of code, productivity with peer programming can be not so bad, because the code is better, so you will not have to debug it too much, and it will run pretty quickly. So giving this how you measure productivity, some studies have shown that short-term productivity might decrease slightly with pair programming, so about 15%. But it has shown that long-term productivity goes up because the code is better, you don't have too many mistakes, you don't need too much time to find the bug, you also have a better architecture, so you don't have to refactor everything when you want to add in some new features. So they say that in long time productivity goes up. Yes?
So how is pair programming used in real life? Is it popular? Because I'm sure even because of that, maybe companies think it's a waste of money to have two programmers in front of
them. Yeah, it depends. It depends on the companies. I think it starts to be a bit popular. I think so. It starts to be used in the company. But yeah, that's still some companies think it's a waste of time. And however, when this, of course, it's a bit hard to evaluate. So this study, so it's better. You can maybe find some studies that so it's the productivity decrease. I don't really know, but some studies really show that the productivity might increase. So, and I think I trust this because, of course, if the code is better, the design is better, in long term, I think it can be good. But yeah, after the company, I think it start to be used in some company. And
is it like one company has this style, or they just do it for 1 week?
No, I think this company have this style of doing. And yeah, I will say, I think, see in the next slide, you can also find a trade-off between doing pair programming and just one people programming. You can find maybe some, I will talk a bit later. And so yeah, and if you also consider the turnover, so when you are hiring new people and when some people of your team are leaving, they say that peer programming is even better because you spread the knowledge between all your team. So then if someone is leaving, it's okay because the other all know what he knows. So it's okay. And in extreme programming, they call about the truck number. So if I remember correctly, it's the number of people that can be hit by a truck and doesn't kill the project. So And they say that they try to be as close as possible of the team size. So if just one of the team survive, then it doesn't kill the project because he has almost all the knowledge of the project. So they compute this number, like truck number, and try to see how many people are really, you cannot do without these people in the project. And they try to really reduce that. So they say that if you consider the staff turnover, then pair programming is even more productive. So I come to pairing strategy. So in extreme programming, all productivity code is written by pair. Usually in non-XP, in the other agile method, but which are non-extreme programming team, pairing is not used at all. So it's not really a lot of spread. But I think a trade-off can also be found. You can use pair programming for some particular task. So for example, mentoring new hires, extremely high risky tasks. So in this case, you can do some pair programming, and for the other case, some other tasks, you can do just normal programming. Also, if you start a new project at the beginning, when the design is really new, you don't really know what to do, so you can start with pair programming and then switch back to normal programming. And also when adopting a new technology, it's a bit the same. When you start with something new, it's good to do it with two people, and then maybe later these two people can work together. So you can also find a trade-off on a rotating monthly or weekly. So people work alone for 1 week, and the other week they work by pairs, and again they work alone and they work by pairs. And finally, you can also, in some teams, they propose to let developer what they prefer. So if they want to work, sometimes some people don't really like also working in pair, so then they can work alone, but some other like, so they can do whatever they want, and maybe also switch according to the task, and let really the people free to do what they want. Okay, so that's all for pair programming. Do you have any other question about pair programming? Okay, so I switch to Scrum. So Scrum is one of the agile methods. So it's mainly based on some iteration process. So I put back this schema scheme. Each iteration in Scrum is called a sprint. So it's usually about 1 month. They try to define the length of this iteration, and they say it's about 1 month. So they try to make it short to be reactive, in fact. So there is several roles in a Scrum team. So you have the product owner. So it's a single person. So it's the person who is responsible of the product vision. It's the person who has the idea. So sometimes it can be the boss of the company. We say we will do a software for that. And this person is responsible for the product vision. He constantly reprioritizes the product backlog. We see that the product backlog, in fact, is just the to-do list for the project. I will talk a bit about the product backlog, but it's really all the tasks you have to do to achieve your product. And he can also accept and reject a project increment. So it's the one who is in charge to say, oh, okay, this fits my vision of the project, and no, it doesn't fit my vision of the product. So after the product owner, you have the development team. So what is really important in Scrum, that the development team is self-organized. So there is not some tester, some coder, and some designer. It's everybody can, they are self-organized. So of course they can say, oh, you will mainly focus on the test, but they do it by their own and try to find the best match for the task they have to do. So the development team negotiate the commitment with the product owner. So they say for this iteration, we will do this task. And then the development team say, oh no, but this task is maybe too hard, we can keep it for later. And they really negotiate with the product owner, which is the commitment for the current iteration. So the development team, has also autonomy regarding how they reach the commitment. So at the beginning, they negotiate with the product owner one commitment, but then the product owner lets them free to do how they want to reach this commitment. So it's a bit what I was saying about agile method. It's there is the developers are really responsible professionals. So we let them free to do whatever they want as soon as they reach the commitment. And of course, the team intensively collaborative, so they really work together. And the last one is the Scrum Master. So the idea is to facilitate the Scrum process. So it's not really a manager, it's more one person who helps the other. So maybe he can organize a meeting and everything that can facilitate the Scrum process. So this person also help resolving the issue. He can also shield the team from external interference or distractor. So for example, this person can be in charge to do the demo to the customer and all these things to avoid that the team is distracted by a lot of other stuff. And what is important, he has no management authority on the team. So he's just here to help the team with relation with the customer of this thing, organizing the meeting, but he's not a manager of the team. Okay, so now we have all these three part of the team. And we have what I was calling what they call the product backlog, which in fact is the to-do list. So they put a list of tasks they have to do to achieve the vision of the product. So they put only, it's a prioritized list. So the item on the top is a more important item, and then as soon as you go down, it's less important. And they also put a letter to identify the size of the granular of the item. So I think S is for small, so it's a small granular, so it's a well-defined task. And when they put M or L, it's a really big task, so it's still not really well defined. But it's not really a big issue because it's not on the on the top of the list. So they have time to refine this task and find some smaller tasks that are also important. So a sprint is composed of several meetings. So the first one is each sprint start with a planning meeting. So the idea is that you want to start to do some new task or some new item of this backlog list. So you will negotiate with the product owner, which the development team will negotiate with product backlog item will be processed during this sprint or iteration, and the product owner say, oh, but no, this task has to be done first. I prefer you do this task, and they have really to negotiate what they will do in this sprint. And it's also to the developer team to say, oh, but this task is really long. We really need to focus only on this task, for example, on this sprint. And or they can say, oh no, but this task is pretty fast, we can also take some more tasks. It's the developer team who evaluate how long they need for doing some particular task. And then they will break, it's mainly the developer team who will break the item into a list of sprint tasks. So each, I think you have the picture just there, yes. So we have the product backlog. So the product owner and the team agree, and we will do all these four items during the next sprint. So they get all these four items and they split it in some small tasks they have to do. And so this one is a product backlog, and this one is the sprint backlog. So it's a bit the schedule for the next iteration. So after the, so it's really at the beginning, you have the planning meeting where the user really define what happened next in the iteration. And then each day you have some daily meeting. So this daily meeting will take place each time at the same time and at the same place to be efficient. So each, for example, each morning at 9, all the people meet at the same location in the building and they just discuss. So it has to be short, so they say about 15 minutes, so a really short meeting. They ask the people to standing up to be sure that the meeting is not too long. They say that if everybody is standing up, then the meeting keeps short. If everybody is sitting, then the meeting can last several hours. So that's why they ask the people just to stand up. So they just stand up and discuss a bit each morning. So what they discuss, so they summarize each developer quickly summarize the work he has done on the previous day. He quickly summarize the work he planned to do on the next day. And he also explain if he has encountered some issues. And they try to discuss a bit about these issues. they also maintain a task list. Each morning, they really, according to what all the developer says, they maintain a task list, or the task not yet started, the task in progress, and the task which has been done. They also maintain an issue list, so the issue which has to be solved, and it's maybe to not distract too much the team, maybe the scrum master can be in charge of managing this issue if he can. And they also maintain a burden chart. I will show you some example, but the idea is to show the progress of the team to get the team motivated. The product owner may also attend to this meeting, but may or may not, because if it's, it depends really of the role of the product owner. But for example, if it's the boss of the company, it's not really good that he attend to this daily meeting, because then the people are a bit scared to say what they have done, what they have not done. So they say that it really depends how it's the position of the product owner in the company. So it may happen if it can help, but if it's not really good and afraid people, it's not really good that it attend to this meeting. So it really depends on the organization of the team. So your sprint backlog can look like this. So you have the committed backlog item, so the one you have select for your next iteration. All the tasks link to each of this commitment. So the tasks not started are put in these columns. And then the task in progress and the task complete. So we will see there is several ways to do that. So you can just use Post-it or some software. So after the daily meeting, so here we are the starting of the sprint. Here we iterate each day, we have the daily meeting, and then at the end we have the review meeting. So the idea of the review meeting is to demonstrate the working product's increment to the product owner. So it's just really to show the result to the product owner by making a demo of the software. So they just do a demo of the software and say, oh, that's what we have done during this iteration. The product owner is in charge to accept or reject the new items and say which items are done or not. So he say, okay, this one is working, I agree, it's done. Or he say, oh no, you are kidding, this one is not working at all, you will have to do it again. And you really, it's really a review of the what they have done during all the sprint. So they really say what is okay or not. Unfinished item returns to the project backlog. So if the project owner considers that his item is not done, they put it back in the project backlog, and it has to be done on the next iteration. And also the master of Scrum can also propose some new items to put in the project backlog. So he can say, oh, but it could be nice to add these functionalities. And then they discuss, and if they all agree, they can add this new functionality into the backlog. So the idea is to make the software evolve dynamically. So we are here, and now the last meeting is a retrospective meeting. So I think the project owner doesn't take a part of this meeting. It's only the developer's team and the master, and the team has really to review its own process to see what is good in this iteration and what is not good, and what is working and not in the team organization. So the team has also to take some decision to adapt and to solve the issue for the next sprint. And in this meeting, I think the Scrum Master have really an important role, because he has to manage the psychological safety of the meeting so that the meeting doesn't turn like in a fight between people. So I think it's really an important task for the master. It's really to keep the meeting really quiet, and that the people can say, oh, but you don't do that really well during this iteration. You should do it better in the next one, but without that the people start to fight each other. So and then we have done this iteration, and we can start for the next sprint. And we have still this one, which is the backlog refinement meeting. So what I was saying a bit at the beginning, some items are too big at the beginning. They are too large or too poorly understood by the developer at the beginning. They know they want this functionality, but at the beginning, they cannot really figure out how they will do this task. So they just put it like this. And when they are doing one iteration, they try a bit to think about this task and try to see how they can do this task and try to split it in some smaller items to put in the backlog. And of course, the master is also can help to do that, because it's one of these roles. So yes, the idea is really to try to have a better view of what can be done in the next iteration and how we will do the next items. Okay, so the good thing is each day they have to maintain, I say, a list of backlog of item list for the sprint. So there is really a lot of different way to do that. So usually they use a whiteboard with all this stuff. I will show you some examples. So this one, it's a backlog which is based on the time of the day. So they put all the tasks they have to do here, and they put all small... this one is more the item from the project backlog, and this one is the small task people have to do. So they try to plan on the morning, so we will try to do this one and this one in the morning, and they really try to plan all the day like this. And I think they also assign some role to each developer who will do which task. So I think they probably wrote on its post-it who is in charge of each small task. So there is another one. Oh. I don't know what's happened. So this one is slightly different. So the tasks are here now, and there is not really a schedule of the day. They just try to put some post-it to see the subtask, and probably maybe the post-it can be, it depends, one color can be for one particular developer. So they can put, for example, the people which has the green color have to do this task and this task, and that's it. So this one, I think the next one is a bit more, this one is really complex. So you have, it's a bit different. So you have here, it's the spring are in this direction. So they start here. So for example, they put this task and this task for the first sprint. Here, each sprint is separated by this, I don't know if you see really well, but this yellow white line. So they start, for example, for the first sprint, so they put the two tasks they have to do. And then they use some small post-it to see. I think the stars is when it's done. So when it's done, they put a star on it. The color magnet is the user who is in charge of the task. So they try really to show which is doing what like this. I think it starts to be a bit messy, but so they put the magnet and to see, for example, the blue person is in charge of these two tasks. And like this, and they put some comment in progress, or if there is some issue inside this part of the board. And here, I will come back on that. Here you have the...
I didn't put it. I forgot to put it. Yeah, you have the bird down chart, I think. So the burden chart is something like look like this. So you have the all the you have the day here and all the tasks you have to do. So usually they plan a bit in advance how fast they will do the task, and then they put which task is done or not. So the actual task remaining to show what is the progress of the project. Yeah, so here you have also this burden chart, and yeah, you have some items. So each time they have finished a sprint, they put this white, I think white tape, to say it's finished, and we switch to the next sprint. That's it. So you can also have some software who do that. So you can have a big screen in the room and showing that. So you have the burn down chart here, and you have the task here, the task to do, the task in progress, and the task to be done. You have the picture of the people in charge of the task. So this is just a software for the wallboard, but you can also have some software that really manage all the process. So from the beginning, having the backlog product, splitting in small product, assign it to some particular developer, and so on. So I can maybe show you a short video. I think this one is nice. Of course, this one is a commercial video, so it's a bit... I will try to put some sound.
At Atlassian, we believe that Agile is not just for software development teams. Agile is for every team. Jira Agile makes Agile easy for every team. Teams face challenges around getting visibility into their work and collaborating to complete work. Let's start at looking at Jira Agile for a Scrum software development team. To truly understand what the team can deliver in a sprint, the team will start by reviewing their past performance.
So yeah, so they first start to have the past performance, so the number of, I don't know, this is called story points. Maybe they assign some points to each task according to the difficulty to do the task, and they put it here to see how much story points they can do and to try to plan a bit what they can do for the next sprint. It's really, I think, one important thing of agile method is the developer is in charge of saying, evaluating how much time they need to do the task. And of course, it's really difficult at the beginning to know how long you need to do that task. But as soon as you iterate in each sprint, then they can be able to more precisely evaluate how much time they do for some other task, and then they start to be more efficient.
As this allows the team to plan with confidence. When looking at the backlog, the team will select stories that deliver the most value to the customer at the end of the sprint, and the team will collaborate to gain a shared understanding of the story and to estimate that story. The team will then identify their sprint commitment and start the sprint. As the team works, they can easily update the board. They have traceability from every story to every commit. The team will track their progress during the sprint. Once they have completed the sprint, the team will start the retrospective, knowing exactly what got done and what didn't. We have now come full circle for a Scrum software development team. They are ready to do it all again and plan the next sprint. Kanban is for flow-based teams like support and operations. These teams start by visualizing their workflow, as this allows the team to stay in control. They can create any workflow that they want, and that workflow will map the columns on the board. We've got advanced teams covered too. For instance, swim lanes can be used to help the team manage their service level agreements. Team members can update issues easily while still on the board. Teams that focus on the flow of work can identify lead time and cycle time of issues and can identify outliers. They can also answer the question, how quickly can we get things done? Jira Agile and Kanban make an amazing difference to any flow-based team in an organization. Jira Agile has Scrum teams covered too. Try Jira Agile today and see how easy it is to adopt Agile, provide visibility for your organization, and collaborate to complete work.
So the idea is, of course, it was a commercial video that's showing you a lot of things moving, but the idea is really that some software can help you to manage the full process of Agile. So instead of putting some post-it everywhere, you can just start with some big task and assigning some people to the task. I don't know if you saw at one point they put some points to say how long they will take to do this task and really try to evaluate and do it a bit in a mathematical way. And try to help with that. So I think that's all. So the conclusion now, so collaboration in software development is necessary for a big, really big project. But it's not so obvious to let the people work together. So first there is some technical constraint. So, like I told at the beginning, some synchronization issue and some version control. And there is also some organizational and social aspects that are really important, how you distribute the task to your team and the social aspect, how you help people to work together and to understand each other. So at the beginning, we talk about version control, which is more the technical aspect, but also a bit of the organizational aspect. So the technical aspect are how you synchronize the work of several people, how you can do versioning, but the organizational part is more how you can split the work of between users in several branches and assign some people to work on some features, some other to fix the bug, and how you can organize your people using this version control and especially the branching system. The second thing is continuous integration. So the goal is really to start from version control, but try to also improve the safety and the efficiency of your development process. And finally, we have the agile method, which here the role is really to organize the team and to propose an adaptive process to be able to fit some unpredictable requirements. So, and I think that's all. I put some references for all this stuff, so version control and all this several things. And so I will give the slide to Michelle to put it online, and you can get the slide and get the references. And that's all. Do you have any questions or comments?